You are about to listen to an episode of The Cypher before it was The Cypher. For our first 75 episodes, we were known as Outside the Lines with Rap Genius, and we had a slightly different format. In all honesty, our production value and sound quality today is much improved from these early episodes. That said, the content is so great that these shows are a valuable part of our archive. If you want more information about our transition, make sure to check out episode 76 with Ritz, which was our first one under the new name. To keep up to date on everything involving The Cypher, visit us online at thecyphershow.com or find us on iTunes. And now, without further ado, here's The Cypher before The Cypher.
You can just get lost in it. You let your imagination get lost in the music.
Hi, and welcome to Outside the Lines with Rap Genius. I'm your host, same old Sean. This week, we were supposed to sit down with Sadat X of Brand Nubian. We did have a fantastic conversation with him, and we're just putting the finishing touches on it, and we'll bring it to you next week. Instead, we sat down with DJ Muggs of Cypress Hill. Since getting his start in the late 80s with the group 7A3, he's had an incredibly successful career with Cypress, and has also done production work on classic songs like Jump Around, Check Yourself, and more. In addition to that, he's put out a ton of solo albums and collaborative records with the likes of GZA, Ill Bill, Sick Jackin, and more. His latest album, just released, is called Bass for Your Face. We're going over Rap showing you Rap Genius stuff before. I showed you some of those 7A3 songs,
yeah.
Which was your first group. What do you remember about those days?
Man, those was the good days when everything was brand new. You know what I mean? Everything was like huge and big, and not knowing what to expect around the next corner, because you couldn't Google it and YouTube it and then see what the experience was going to be like. You know. A lot of it, there was no way to know, so he was just going through it. And, you know, that was like being my introduction to the music business, like my four-year college education, you know what I mean? Slam dunk, on-the-job training. So, but through that, I learned how to produce music. You know, I learned what publishing was. I learned what touring was like, you know. We was on tour with groups like Tony, Today, MC Hammer, Salt-N-Pepa, on the hip-hop side, you know, we was out with Rob Bass, De La, so that was a good time, but...
Hammer, was that was before he was...
He was big already. We was opening up, we was on the, I think it was Today, Tony, Salt-N-Pepa, and Hammer tour. We was like, or going on at like 3:30 in the afternoon when the venue opened, you know, like, so... But, you know, I was with Cypress before I was with 7A3. But one of my homeboys, Eli, came by one day and he's like, yo, Muggs, I met these kids from Brooklyn. They live in Hollywood. We was in L.A. And they got a record out. It's called 7A3 Will Rock You on Mercola Records on a 12-inch.
So I'm like, wow, they have a real record.
So I went out there. We met them. They was cool. And we was doing a party back where we lived. So we was like, hey, let's put them on the show because they got a real record out. Let's put them on our show. So we called and said, hey, want to do the show? Brett and them was like, cool. So they came down, did the show, and their DJ didn't show up. So I stepped in and DJed for them. And they was like, well, you want to be our DJ? And I was like, all right, cool. So they go, we got three shows with Ice-T coming up. I don't know if y'all familiar with L.A., but where the Beverly Center is right now, there used to be a club there called Osco's. And they used to have a lot of shows there and stuff. So we went back, did the shows with Ice-T, and then A&R guy Jeff Fenster was got us a song on the movie Colors on the soundtrack. So we did a song called Mad Mad World for the Colors soundtrack. Off of that, we put a 12-inch out. Song was really big in L.A. It was called Why. And then we got an album deal with Geffen. We were signed to Geffen when like Guns N' Roses was cracking. And record did good, we went and worked with Bomb Squad. We worked with Daddy O from Stetsasonic. We worked with Joe the Butcher, Nicolo. Schoolie D worked with us on something on that record. You know, a bunch of brothers. And it was a learning experience, you know what I mean? That was, like I'm saying, that was college right there, boom, going through the recording process and everything. Because then again, you had to kind of go to recording school or know people that had that was in the business to be in a recording studio. They know the process, to be able to learn the process. That wasn't, couldn't go get the online training, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And we didn't know about that shit. We didn't know nobody who knew people that did that. So going through the 7A3 process, I had a lot of the ideas for the production, but I didn't do the production Joe the Butcher did. So after the record was done, I was like, damn, I thought a few of these records should have came out different. They should have sounded like this. So at that, then I just went and bought my drum machine because I was like, nah, I want to make this shit. And I know how to make it now because I went through the process. And but I want it to sound like this. And that's when I was with Cypress before. So now they was going through this with me. Like, you know, we would meet with Def Jam. They was like, so what's your guys' concept? What you guys about? At that time, he was like, concept? What the fuck is that? You know what I mean? And so, you know, I learned when it was time to go and like make records with Cypress, oh, we got to have a concept. So Cypress was really thought out from going through the 7A3 process. You know, you got to have a good logo. Got to know how to put hooks and bridges in your songs. You know what I mean? This shit is called publishing, and this is how you get, you know. So that was really like kind of our little minor league training.
Yeah. So by the time you got to Cypress, you knew it'd be like a cohesive thing. How would you describe the Cypress Hill sound? Because even from the very beginning, from that first record, you had a well-established, like, pretty unique thing going on, sound-wise, you know?
Yeah, I'm just trying to make psychedelic rock, psychedelic blues music. You know what I mean? That's what I'm inspired by, man. I love psychedelic rock music and classic rock bands. And mix that with EPMD and Ultramagnetic and Public Enemy, you know what I mean? And, you know, Blunted Funk. And that's the sound I'm going for. So trying to translate through my brain through, you know, at those days, I was using 30, 40 samples on songs, just making collages. If I had a cardboard this big, my collage wasn't a big picture. My collage was a bunch of little tiny things, just all like coming in and out and just a lot of movement in the songs. And probably wouldn't be able to make them records anymore with all the samples, you know, the way the sample laws are and things are now. But, you know, that's how that went down.
Yeah. I mean, even from the beginning, you've had this knack for making beats that sound like kind of dark and foreboding and stuff. You know, like what's the secret to making a beat sound ominous?
Man, that's just what comes out of me. That's how it comes through the filter. You know what I mean? Like we can all say we made beats and we did this, but man, all this shit's been done before. Everything comes from someplace. You know what I mean? You're just a filter, and so that's the way I listen to music, and then the kind of music that comes out of me is more like this. You know what I mean? Sometimes I'll make. Like, I couldn't really make big pop records because when I hear them, I don't have the music sensibility to know, is this a good Britney Spears song or is this a bad Britney Spears song? Like, how do you know? I don't know. So what I like is this kind of music. So I make this kind of music. It's cool. It happens to be good because a lot of people like that kind of music too. So it works. But, you know, as an artist, I don't sit in a studio like, what's going to make everybody happy? You know, my first thing is, what's dope? That's my instincts. I don't even ask my friends because I have friends going, I don't like that. And they end up being hit songs or being my favorite shit. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to ask none of these motherfuckers what they think because it really don't matter what they think because I'm going to live by my good decisions and die by my decisions. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then I'm not going to be mad at nobody. Right. You know, so it worked. It's been working. So I'm going to just keep doing what I'm doing.
Right. I have to ask, did you have any, even on the 7A3 records, they were still calling you Muggs, Grandmaster Muggs and all that kind of stuff. Did you have a DJ name other than that ever?
Nah, that's it. I've just been Muggs the whole time. So, just rock with that.
Excellent. And you were talking about, you know, pop hits and not in some ways understanding pop music, but you had pop hits, like pretty huge ones. Was that weird at all to hear stuff
it's that could be a slant on words. Mm-hmm. And what I mean is, Britney Spears is a pop record that's a pop hit.
Right.
Having a popular song is what a pop hit was should be, right?
Yeah.
But our interpretation of the word pop just seems to almost be cheesy.
Right.
Which basically, when we had big records that happened to get, you know, played on radio and went across and ended up reaching the masses and hitting the tipping point, we wasn't making nothing out of character for ourselves. We was making Cypress Hill records, still, you know, hard, funky, with their play on words and everything. It was just people was accepting it. It was getting pushed on a bigger level, you know, so it would get more exposure, which would all of a sudden have them played on stations that would, you know, normally probably not play records, you know, How I Can Kill a Man and stuff. But it's funny, at that time, they was playing a lot of stuff on the radio. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, you know, I don't know. I think it's funny when bands just go totally out of their whole shit. Like, all of a sudden, you heard their first two albums and they're dope, and then they got this fucking big singer, pop singer on their records. To me, that's making a pop record. You know what I mean? We was making hardcore hip-hop that the fucking masses and K-Rocks and rock and roll festivals was being like, yo, that shit's dope. Let's get these motherfuckers over here, which was making it better for other motherfuckers that were coming with some hardcore good shit to be able to do their music and not have to change it to get on the radio too, you know what I mean? So we've always been like, fuck the radio, fuck MTV, fuck it, you know, our mentality, NWA, you know what I mean? You didn't have the internet at that time. You didn't have nothing except for, you know, the streets, and if radio wasn't playing you, you was going platinum still? Fuck, you know, you was doing something.
Definitely. So much of what makes you stand out as a producer is not even your beats necessarily, but the arrangements, right? Changes in the beat over the course of the song to bring out different sections and different things with people's voices and stuff like that. Where'd you learn that from? And like, what kind of factors go into in a song deciding when to switch the beat up?
I mean, for me, that's just my instincts when it comes to music, you know, and that's what makes me do that. I don't know, why does a song sound incomplete to me sometimes, and why do I think it needs something on this thing right here? That's an instinct. That's something I think you can't read about in a book, you know what I mean, or learn on a fucking blog. You can read, you can learn the technical stuff, you can learn to play and everything, but to have something that's just a unique characteristic of your own just comes from someplace. And I think, you know, I think at the beginning when you start producing, you learn, you kind of copy, because you got to kind of learn.
Who were you copying when you started, as far as those
aspects? I was trying to be Marley Marl, you know what I mean? Like, I just wanted to make every beat sound like Marley Marl. So, you know, and I fucking loved Ultramagnetics. I loved EPMD, you know what I mean? Like, these groups. I love Led Zeppelin. I love Pink Floyd. I love blues, a lot of blues in my house, reggae. So me going through all this music and then listening to all these things I just named and then filtering through me to make this, you know what I mean? Cypress, like I said, was I'm trying to make a blues record. And I'm trying to make a hip-hop, classic rock, blues shit. But, you know, there's that classic rock that goes across the board, like... you know, you hear like Come Together by the Beatles, or you hear, you know, Hotel California, and there's certain songs that just everybody likes across the board. So, you know, it's like trying to make records like that.
Nice. And you work with singers, right? Starting at least on Dust and probably before. With the stuff on Dust, how'd the singers' contributions come about? Did you like write lyrics or suggest topics, or just kind of say, here's the music, do your thing?
The lyrics they came about different ways. First of all, like Josh Todd from Buck Cherry, his song was he basically did it. I gave him the beats, he wrote this stuff and came in and kicked it, and he's an amazing talent, you know what I mean? So that wasn't too hard. When you know, a lot of times people that are writers and performers, they pretty much, you let them do their thing, because that's what you do. Like, when you call me, you, like, do your thing. You don't try to, like, have me do some other thing. You might as well got that guy who does that kind of shit to do that shit. So, if they're just singers and they're really not songwriters, then you come in on that list. They got somebody, you work it out. And if it's your beat and you already have like, oh, I want this to be the song, this is the concept I have for the title, I'll tell you, hey, the song's called, you know, Fly Away. Write this shit called, here's da-da-da-da, here's what it's about. Then put the lyric and the melody to the concept. So it's all different at any time. And you, sometimes you try the first one and it don't work, you know. So you kind of work your way through the maze.
You've collaborated with, done duo records with a lot of people, with Ill Bill and Sick Jackin and GZA and all those kind of folks. When you're working with one MC on an album project, do you try to tailor beats to them? Like, how do you make a decision about what kind of beat fits in an Ill Bill versus a GZA?
Well, what I'm gonna do when they come to the studio, I'm gonna play everything I think that I made for them, and then I'm gonna play them every other beat I just have, and then they pick the beats. You know, like if you're like, man, I don't like the beat you did on this album, he picked every beat. You know, so it's that's how that shit works. So,
who's been the most surprising in their beat selection, where it's like they don't pick the stuff that you think that is, you know, you made specifically for them, and they end up picking like other stuff?
I'm gonna tell you one. I did with Ice Cube. I did Check Yourself, and I had did a beat that was an interlude for the Funk Dubious. I didn't even like the beat. That's why it was gonna be a 30-second interlude, and Ice Cube picked it for Check Yourself, which was a number one record. So I was like, damn. You know what I mean?
He heard something.
Even when he did Check Yourself, and it was weird that I still didn't like the beat, but I liked the song, if you know what I'm saying. I thought the beat was whack, but I'm like, but this song, why do I like this song so much? You know, because of the lyric. But
Has that been weird to be that much involved in a song that has become like that deeply involved in pop culture? You know, it's catchphrase and
right,
you know what I mean? Everyone knows.
Yeah, that one's been good. It's, you know, it still trips me out though, to jump around. Like, that song just keeps picking up steam. You know what I mean? When I'm seeing, like,
yeah, I feel like every few years is in it another movie or commercial or something.
Movies, commercial, college football teams use it for their theme song. You know, you watch some of them college football things on YouTube, and there's 75,000 kids jumping. Like, holy fuck, what is this shit?
That's incredible. So, back to the early days of Cypress, you had a guest in the video for how I Could Kill a Man.
Yep.
Right? How'd Q-tip end up there?
Q-tip was just walking by. Yeah, it was a funny day because I think we invited Cube. Cube was in New York, Ice Cube, and we did it down in Astro Place where the Cube is. You know, the Cube down in Astro Place, and we called Cube. Q-Tip was there, Tim Dog was there, if you've seen him in the back, and it was funny because he had Fuck Compton, but there was Cube, Ike, and then Alchemist told me Prodigy and Havoc was young, like they were still in high school, I think, and they was like, they was there in the crowd.
Wow.
So, you know, that was the last scene of the day. We had been shooting all day with Shady Perez and David Perez, we call him Shady. And not because he's shady, you know, he's just a cool cat, you know, he's in the shade all the time. He's like, I'm cool, dog, y'all go sweat it out. And yeah, that was the last scene when we had Shady was on a ladder shooting from up top, so we got the view like this. And if you look in the video, you'll see everybody I just said up in the video, just pretty much just walking, you know, New York. You'll be someplace and you just see everybody on some random street for no reason as you're walking through the city. You know what I mean? So everybody coming through that space, and this crowd's conjugated in the circle with these cars parked, and you're hearing this music. Everybody just walked right over there, especially because that song was banging on the underground in New York at the time too. All the DJs was playing it, so everybody knew the record because, you know, we was all tuned into the late night mix shows.
So the Soundboy Killer EP, which is the last project before this new album that just came out, was a real mix of it was more on the reggae sort of. Reggae mixed with dance music kind of tip, I guess I would say. Can you talk a little bit about working in that sound, in that style?
Well, you know, I try, you know, hip-hop, everything I make comes from a hip-hop spirit. So DJing around the world, traveling, being a fan of music, always looking for experimental music and the next new music, you know, it's just a whole big instrumental scene out there in the world. And there's a big beat scene in L.A., big instrumental scene, you know what I mean, and around the world. And, you know, you got stuff in Europe. So when I DJ out a lot, that's the kind of music I play. So I'm just always looking for new beats. And, you know, you inspired by everything, but you can't do everything. And I want to do all kinds of music, you know what I mean? I just ain't enough hours in the fucking day to do it all. So DJing, I'm like, man, I want to make a few records that I can play in all the festivals where I'm not, like, a lot of times I might be playing your record, but when a lot of times when I'm playing the festivals and they're not my records, I'll take your record and I'll remix it and I'll put other songs and I'll put drum breaks in them to make them mine. But so that's what stemmed me doing the Bass for Your Face album. And the Soundboy Killer is just extra songs like I had recorded in the process that I had sitting around. And it was just, you know, instead of just dropping a record on him, I dropped an electronic record on Mishka first. It came out, it's called Sound Clash Business. Mm-hmm. And then we dropped this one. And it's just me using different sounds and different elements, like using sounds from dub to drum and bass to glitch to using dubstep bass lines, you know, and then using different keyboard instruments I never used before. So going and, you know, just educating myself on production techniques and how the stuff works was fun, because a lot of times I was learning.
Yeah, that must be fun. It's essentially learning a whole new genre.
And I really, what I had to do is just leave what I known alone, and just because I kept going back to it, but I wasn't learning. So I was like, man, you just got to put your drum machines away and just do this. So for 6 months, that's all I did every day, and just learned a whole new production, a whole new another angle at it that I could never worked like before. So going through the experience and shit just opened everything up back on using the drum machines and, you know, hip-hop shit. So and just put all those sounds together, and I'm like, all right, I'm gonna make a record like this, but I'm gonna make my record coming with Muggs's energy behind it still, not trying to fit into don't fit into an EDM thing, you know what I mean? My shit is like more just, it's like electronic bass music. It's just hip, with more of a hip-hop bass to it. And so, you know, that's why I'm bringing it right now.
And the Bass for Your Face has stuff like that. It also has some vocal tracks as well.
Yeah, I put more vocal tracks on that, you know. Bass for Your Face, featuring some of the best MCs in the game, period, right
Freddie
now.
Freddie Gibbs, one of my favorites.
Freddie Gibbs, Rock Marcy, you know what I mean? Danny Brown. I got a songstress from London called Bella Humble. She's on a big dance song for last year called Cracks by Flux Pavilion. Who else is Killer P, one original grime MCs from London. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Got to pay homage to the originators of a lot of different kinds of bass music. You know what I mean? L.A., we're known for 808s. You know, L.A. is known for its bass, you know, especially through Brian Big Bass, who, you know, is one of the biggest mastering engineers in the world. You know, everybody goes to Brian Big Bass for bass in L.A., and, you know, Dre coming through L.A., and L.A. being such a car culture that everybody drives cars and fucking bass. You want bass in your car. And when growing up, you don't give a fuck what your tweeters sound like. You don't care what the mid-range sounds like. You just want bass. And you want motherfuckers to hear it two blocks away. So when you rolling by, man, you know you're cool as fuck. Everybody looking at you, and you got all that fucking bass. You can't hear no lyrics. There's so much bass.
That's what I wanted to ask you about.
That's the shit, though.
The beginning,
you don't give a fuck. That shit is banging. So, you know, so hearing music that inspires you and different things you want to do, man, I don't think anybody wants to lead a one-dimensional existence, whether it's eating the same fucking food every day, never traveling, you know what I mean, and exposing yourself to things. So with music, I'm constantly looking for new sounds and new styles, you know. Similar, you know, the Beatles did it. They went around the world looking for new instrumentations and instruments and sounds to apply to them. Led Zeppelin does it and stuff. So me, like, you know, being inspired by these guys when I'm doing my thing and my way, just sound inspires me. And I'm like, how can I make this sound my thing? Or how can I take these sounds, and I'll take techno sounds and make it hard-ass hip-hop trap shit. You know, I'll make it hard, straight hip-hop. And but not even with their gloss on it. You know, you run it through machines and fuck the sound up. So, you know, it's a challenge for me, and it's fun, and it cleans your musical palate, and it, and you, you won't, I'm not bored when I'm making, like, the few hip-hop albums I'm making right now.
Here you're talking about bass, and from the beginning, you know, at least from the beginning of the Cypress Hill days, you had this very distinctive, very round kind of bass sounds. What kind of goes into making like a Cypress Hill bass?
Man, we like a lot of bass. Distortion on it, bass is fat, fucking subs, you know, the roundness of it, and the subs just taking over. Sometimes it's just, it's the lead line in the track. It just engulfs the track and everything's in here. But you hear everything, you know, you give everything its space and it's all legible. So bass is very important in our sound. It always has been, because it really balances B-Real's vocals out, since he has a higher pitch vocal. You know, there's some rappers you hear that they don't need bass. They rap on pianos and drums and it sounds banging. But B, I've noticed the way I like to produce them is I like a big bass line, because I just think it balances the track in a certain way that's comforting to the ear.
Yeah, and you have a lot to play around with the voices in Cypress Hill, right? Essentially one high-pitched guy and one lower-pitched guy.
Well, yeah, I got Sen, who's got, first of all, his regular voice, but then the other voice he's created that we run through a megaphone effect, you know what I mean? So with those two, with that, it's like I got almost three instruments to play with, and with be harmonizing, you know, that's another instrument, so... It just gives you options to build your song and develop the structure of the song. So, because, you know, things that are straight through all the time is cool, but it gets monotonous, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And as winding down, I want to ask you real quick about scratching. Like, even back in the 7/8/3 days, they used to give you these long scratch breaks in the middle of tunes. Has that always been something you took to immediately when starting to DJ?
Well, I scratch and I do stuff in the shows. I didn't do nothing on the record, but when I DJ out, yes, I definitely... Yeah. People want to be entertained, man. They want to see that stuff. They don't want to see too much. Don't interrupt the fucking flow of the dance floor, and don't interrupt the flow of the party because you want to do 3 minutes of some fucking trick shit, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But mix it in there where it's tasteful and you never stop the flow. So, you know, people love to see, you know, Jimi Hendrix play the guitar behind his neck and...
I was saying you have some scratchers. I think I saw
one behind his back, but he ain't fucking the flow of the concert. So when we do shows, you know, we put on a performance, and you know, we like to entertain the people, and then you know, show them what turntablism is, and you know, and it's an art form that the reason you know you don't they stop making turntables or there's only CD players because it actually takes a lot of time to learn how to play turntables as an instrument. Where CDJs, you can learn in a week. You can be really good in 1 week. But, fucking, you ain't even going to learn how to do a regular first scratch in a week and learn how to mix records in a week, you know. So I understand a lot of the new cats using the digital equipment because they want to perform. They don't want to take 3 years to fucking get good, you know what I mean? So, but that's cool because there's going to be certain kids that are going to continue to do that. And, you know... Then I like to bring that kind of performance to different crowds. And instead of just like, just that, it's like bring it out there. And, you know, I hear what a lot of people, I listen. So, you know, when you hear people talk about scratch DJs or different kinds of DJs, you know, he scratches too much. He does too much of this or this. So when you do gigs like that, you just do enough in the right places to make everybody want more. That's the key, is always keep them wanting a little bit more, man.
And what are you DJing on? Like, is it vinyl still for any kinds of shows, or
no? Vinyl's pretty much obsolete in my world because I'm playing a lot of remixes, mm-hmm. and a lot of songs I'm playing they don't even put on vinyl. So I'm using Serata. I'm still, you know, two turntables. I just use Serata. It's still acting as the vinyl. The actual action's the same. It's just my crate of 10 records I used to carry around with me everywhere. I have it all in one little box now. So essentially, I just bring my crate of records and open it up, and then it's still, you know, and I take the art of DJing. I mean, I love it still. It's an art, so I practice. I still practice all the time. Get together with friends. We got a table like this. We got 3 sets of turntables on. You know, we'll practice, and, you know, keeps it from getting boring. It's just like jam sessions and shit. So when you go out and do shows, you know, you can add a little pizzazz to the to the experience, as opposed, you know, because I don't fist pump and shit, man. You know, I'm not a good dancer, so I figure I better learn how to play this damn turntable really good to entertain people.
Excellent. And, excuse me, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask, is there any particular beat, like, if you had to say, like, there's one beat of yours that you would want people to know about? You know what I mean? If there was just one particular production that they were like, you know, had to know about you, that you wanted to leave behind as your legacy, if there was just one, like, what would it, what do you think it would be?
Damn.
You know, vocals aside, or maybe you can think of it as part of it, but just like,
shit,
one beat.
I don't know, man. What do I like? I like Make It Rough by Ice Cube. That beat is hard as fuck. That beat is sonically and lyrically is about the LA riots. Sonically, if you wanted to know what that the whole riots looked like and everything, listen to the beat. If you wanted to know what happened, why the riots happened, listen to the lyrics. You know what I mean? So that song right there is a monster, yo. That make motherfuckers want to slam dance and start driving your cars through a goddamn wall and shit.
Excellent. And what else? So finally, what else do you have coming out? Obviously, you just released the record just the other day, Face Your Face.
We got a new project called Cross My Heart. Me and my partner, Drew Tradition from the band Strife, and a vocalist named Brevi. We got a new project coming out on March 5th called Cross My Heart on Alpha Pup Records. Give you the EP before I leave.
That would be great.
Yeah, so be on the lookout for that. CMHHTD is the website. It's an audio art project, audio street art. So it's real interesting. I promise you. Check it out.
That was our interview with DJ Muggs. Now we have some bonus material straight from Muggs' verified Rap Genius account. Here he is, talking about creating the great Cypress Hill song, I Want to Get High.
This song right here, I'm real into the blues. And I like the sound, you know, first of all the feel, but the sound and the grittiness of the blues. So a lot of times when I would make Cypress records, especially the early ones, try to get that grit. And it's the same thing, this record right here, on the SP-12, if you sample the drums, it only works in increments of 6. So you sample the drums at 100, you can't move them to 99, 98. You can only go to 94 or 106. So that's how I sampled the drums, 6 BPMs faster. So when I slowed it down, gave the drums more of a gritty feel. And the music was like some bubbly type jazzy funk shit. So I did the same thing with it, but I did it to like 18 BPMs faster and slowed it down. And then the SP-12 gives it a ring, and the more you do it, the more there's this ring to the sound. So that was the beat. Put an 808 on it, kept it simple, you know what I mean? James Brown style, you know, you just got grooves, right? And they're simple. They go for 10 minutes, and you don't get bored. So that's the idea, to make that hypnotizing shit, and that shit that could just go, and you could get lost in it. You let your imagination get lost in the music. And then when it's time to put the lyrics on it, Me and B, we'll just write ideas down in books every day whenever there's ideas. So when it's time to make a record and shit, I got ideas to draw from, you know what I mean? Doing this shit is easy, but coming up with that idea that can change the whole record, you know, that shit comes and goes in the air, so you got to catch it when it comes and preserve it. So we had that one. You know, we listened to a lot of reggae and shit, and so we put the hook on there, and the format of the rap was pretty much like Stone is the Way of the Walk, where it was one long 32-bar verse with two hooks on it. So that's how we did that one.
Now, here he is talking about one of his first hits, the 7A3 song Mad Mad World, which was originally on the soundtrack to the movie Colors.
The thing about 7A3 that I always dug was, like, it had the, like, East Coast vibe from the like rhythm section samples.
Yeah.
But then the drums sounded like very early West Coast, right? Like drum machine.
The drums were the homie Johnny Rivers.
Oh, okay.
Johnny Rivers, when I had met 7A3, was their producer. So when I had met him, this stuff was real like real like drum machines and synth sounds. They had did a song on Mercola Records called 7/8 We Will Rock You, which was a remake of We Will Rock You. So I got in the group and I was like, he was in the studio with the drums, and I grabbed the James Brown record, Papa Don't Take No Mess, and was just playing the record over the top of the beat, and the record was swaying in tempo. Tempo was going faster and slower, so I was grabbing the side of the turntable and slowing the record down so it would stay on beat. But then it was fucking with the pitch of the horn line, so it gives like a wow, like a little LFO kind of wobble to it. So that was something like that, you know. That was about the song. Brett was just on some conscious stuff at the time. Write a song about, you know, Mad Mad World. After we seen Colors, and Colors was crazy. Colors was about gangbanging in L.A. You know what I mean? And a lot of fools killing each other. So the song was basically like that.
Here's Muggs talking about his remix of the Beastie Boys' So What You Want.
Must have been tough to, like, reinvent something that everyone knows as having a particular beat. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it was 92 or 94. The Beastie Boys hit me up to remix So What You Want. So I know, you know, basically wanted a little bit of that Cypress flavor. So we went in and just did what we was doing at the moment, you know. Just gave it a real gritty SB-12 tuned down, which gives it a certain modulation and a ring to it. And just makes the shit sound real grimy. And it's maybe like third, fourth generation VHS tape type of vibe. So we did it like that, and I did the remix, finished the music up and shit, and then I called B-Real. I told him to get on the song, you know what I mean, because at that time we was coming out, the Beastie Boys been out, thought it was a good thing to put them on the record and just increase the awareness of what we was doing at the time.
Here's the backstory behind one of Cypress Hill's biggest hits, Insane in the Brain.
Well, first of all, it wasn't our favorite song on the record, but I knew it was the single, you know what I mean? It was a little bit more, it was pretty much the same formula of the first record, the way the song structure is and the kind of the title and the way I played with the instrumentation and sending B-Real's vocals off of each other. I felt, you know, people still didn't have enough first record. They still wanted more, a little more of that sound. So Insane in the Brain is it's a slang in L.A., like gangs will use it. So they'll be like, crazy insane, got no brain, something, something, 58th Street gang, you know what I mean? So we use that and use that for the song. And then when I first did the record, I made it at like, it's fast. It's like probably 104 BPM, but I made it at like 93. She was real just slow and like kind of some grand poobah shit. And I was like, B started rhyming, kicking me the rap, and I was like, oh no. Started speeding it up, got it to about 101, and by the time we finished, I got it probably to 104. So, but that made it, you know, gave it bounce, gave it more energy. And the record took off for us. We did the video at the DNA Lounge in San Francisco. We was in Frisco all the time doing shit, and she was off the hook up there. So we went out there, did the video, and, you know, the record got on radio and shit. Wasn't like we expected it to get on radio like that. We didn't go put no R&B singers on it or get a Teddy Riley remix and that, you know, New Jack Swing, you know what I mean? So I'm like, cool, I want to play it, let's do it. And they just started asking us to be on all the rock festivals, you know what I mean? Hey, you guys want to come play with Metallica and Pearl Jam? We was like, nah, we don't want to do that, we want to keep it just underground hip hop. So we was like, of course we want to go play. You know what I mean? That just started expanding everything. And there it went. This record just took off from there.
You can get even more behind-the-scenes information from DJ Muggs at his verified Rap Genius account. Go to rapgenius.com/DJ Muggs. If you've enjoyed Outside the Lines with Rap Genius, please subscribe on iTunes. While you're there, give us a review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the easier it is to keep getting quality guests like DJ Muggs. Please hit me up with your comments and thoughts about Outside the Lines. You can reach me on Twitter. I'm at Same Old Sean. That's S-H-A-W-N. Also, keep an eye out for the upcoming OutsideTheLinesPodcast.com. which is being built as we speak by our webmaster, the awesome Paul Dice. Outside the Lines is created and written by Sean Sotaro, a.k.a. Same Old Sean. The show is produced and engineered by Josh Cross at Crosstown Studios.
Makes the shit sound real grimy, and it's maybe like third, fourth generation VHS tape.
This week's interview was recorded by Aaron Vasquez. Our music is by Psionic. Our show's loyal intern is Sunny Cahara. Next week, we have our long-awaited interview with Sadat X of Brand Nubian. Check it out.